Chapter 15. The Ministry of Love. Winston did not know where he was. He supposed he was in the Ministry of Love, but there was no way of being certain. He was alone in a high windowless cell. Bright white light came from somewhere, and there was a hard narrow shelf to sit on, fixed to the wall. At the opposite end to the door, there was a toilet without a seat. There were four telescreens, one on each wall. Winston was hungry, so hungry that his stomach hurt. He had no idea how long he had been there, and he still did not know whether it had been morning or evening when they arrested him. He had not been given any food. He had already learned to sit very still on the narrow shelf. He had felt in his pocket to see if he had anything to eat, but a voice had shouted from the telescreen,
6079 Smith W. Keep your hands out of your pockets in the cells.
Before being brought here, he had been taken to a noisy, dirty prison where there were party prisoners like him and also ordinary criminals. The party prisoners were frightened and silent, but the ordinary criminals shouted at the guards and fought with them. Winston did not know how long they had kept him there. There were no clocks, and there was no daylight. Nobody spoke to him. It might have been 2 or 3 hours since they had brought him to this cell. The pain in his stomach never went away. Sometimes it got worse, and he could only think about his desire for food. Sometimes it got better, and he started to feel terror about being tortured. He could feel truncheons hitting his elbows and knees as if it was really happening. He did not think about Julia. More often, he wondered where he was and what time of day it was. In this place, he knew the lights would never be turned off. It was the place with no darkness, which he had dreamed about, and which O'Brien knew about too. Suddenly, there was the sound of heavy boots, and the door opened. A guard pushed Parsons into the cell. Winston was so surprised that he spoke without thinking about the telescreen.
"You!" he cried.
Parsons looked neither interested nor surprised. He was just very unhappy.
"What are you in here for?" asked Winston.
"Thought crime," replied Parsons, almost crying. "You don't think they'll shoot me, do you, old friend? They don't shoot you if you haven't actually done anything, do they? If you've only had thoughts, which you can't help. I tried to do my best for the party, didn't I?"
"Are you guilty?" said Winston.
"Of course I'm guilty," cried Parsons, looking at the telescreen. "Thought crime is a terrible thing, old friend. You do it without even knowing you're doing it. Do you know what I said in my sleep? Down with Big Brother."
"Who told the thought police?" asked Winston.
"My little daughter," said Parsons,
sounding sad and proud at the same time.
"She listened outside the bedroom door. I'm proud of her, really. I've made her into a good little party member, haven't I?"
Sometime later, Parsons was taken away by two guards. More prisoners came and went, mysteriously. Often, an officer pointed at somebody and said, "Room 101. Winston soon realized that these words filled everyone with terror. They shook, their faces went pale, and one man started to shout,
"Shoot me, hang me, tell me who you want me to betray and I will betray them. Kill my wife and children in front of me, but don't take me to room 101.
A long time passed, and Winston was on his own again. When he stood up, he felt as if he was going to faint from hunger. When he sat on the hard shelf, his bones hurt. But when he forgot about how his body felt, the terror returned. The sound of boots approached again. The door opened and O'Brien came in. Winston jumped to his feet in surprise.
"They've got you too," he cried.
"They got me a long time ago," said O'Brien, smiling slightly.
He moved a little so Winston could see a huge guard with a long black truncheon in his hand.
"You knew this, Winston," O'Brien continued. "You have always known it."
Winston realized that he had always known it, but there was no time to think about it now. He was looking at the guard's truncheon and wondering where it was going to land. The truncheon hit Winston's elbow very hard, and pain exploded in his body. As he fell to the floor, he saw the guard laughing. It was after this that the interrogations started. Winston was tortured and made to confess to a lot of different crimes, like spying and betraying secrets to the enemy. There were always six men in black uniforms, sometimes hitting him with their truncheons, sometimes kicking him. Sometimes he was put back in the cell and left to recover for a few hours, then taken out and beaten again. Sometimes men in white coats checked his body and gave him pills to make him sleep. In the end, all he wanted to do was find out what they wanted him to confess so he could confess it quickly before the torture started again. All through his interrogations, although he had never seen him, he had the feeling that O'Brien was there. It was O'Brien who told the guards to hit Winston, and it was O'Brien who stopped them from killing him. He was an enemy, then he was a friend. He thought he heard O'Brien's voice in his ear saying, "Don't worry, Winston. I am looking after you. I have been watching you for 7 years. Now I am going to cure you and make you perfect." It was the same voice that had said to him, "We shall meet in the place where there is no darkness," in his dream. When Winston was at last conscious again, he was tied to a sort of bed so that he could not move. He did not know how long the interrogations had gone on. He did not know whether the spaces between his memories lasted weeks or just days or even seconds. Since the moment they had arrested him, he had not seen darkness or daylight. Now, light that seemed stronger than usual was falling on his face. O'Brien was standing at his side. Winston did not know how long he had been there. He lay on the bed, looking up at O'Brien. Under O'Brien's hand, there was a lever, and below the lever was a dial, like an old clock face with numbers. "I told you," said O'Brien, "that if we met again, it would be here."
"Yes," said Winston.
O'Brien's hand moved the lever slightly, and pain exploded through Winston's body. He felt as if his back was going to break.
"You are afraid," said O'Brien, "that your back is going to break. That is what you are thinking, isn't it, Winston?"
Winston did not answer. O'Brien moved the lever again, and the pain disappeared.
"That was 40, said O'Brien. "The numbers on the dial go up to 100. Now we're going to have a conversation. Remember that if you tell me any lies or say anything stupid, you will cry out with pain. Do you understand that?"
"Yes," said Winston.
O'Brien's voice became gentler.
"I am going to cure you," he said. "Because it is clear that you are not going to cure yourself. You know what the problem is. You cannot remember real events, and you make yourself think that you remember other events which never happened. Let us think about an example. At the moment, who is Oceania at war with?"
With East Asia.
Good, said O'Brien. And Oceania has always been at war with East Asia, hasn't it?
Winston looked at the dial and did not speak.
I want the truth, please, Winston. Your truth. Tell me what you think you remember.
I remember that until only a week before I was arrested, we were not at war with East Asia. The war against Eurasia had lasted for 4 years. Before that,
O'Brien waved his hand and stopped him from speaking.
Let me give you another example, he said. A few years ago, you believed that three party members who were executed for betraying Oceania to an enemy were not guilty. You believed that you had a photograph which proved this.
Suddenly, Winston could see that O'Brien was holding the photograph of the three men. For a moment, he forgot the dial.
It exists! He cried.
No, said O'Brien. Then he walked across the room to a memory hole and put the photograph into it.
It does not exist. It never existed.
But it did exist. It exists in memory. I remember it. You remember it.
I do not remember it, said O'Brien. This was doublethink. Winston felt helpless. O'Brien went on.
There is a party's slogan about control of the past. Repeat it, please.
Whoever controls the past controls the future. Whoever controls the present controls the past, said Winston, obeying him immediately.
O'Brien repeated the slogan and then asked, Do you think, Winston, that the past is something real?
Winston's eyes moved towards the dial. He did not know whether the answer yes or no would save him from pain.
No, he said.
Then where does the past exist?
It is written down in records, replied Winston, and it is in people's memories.
Well, we, the party, control all records, said O'Brien, and we control all memories. So, we control the past, don't we?
But how can you stop people remembering things? Cried Winston, forgetting the dial. How can you control memory? You haven't controlled mine.
O'Brien sounded angry and disappointed.
You have not controlled your memory. You have not learned that reality exists only in the mind of the party and nowhere else. The party decides what is real and unreal, true and untrue.
Then O'Brien asked,
Do you remember writing in your diary, freedom is the freedom to say that 2 + 2 = 4?
Yes, said Winston.
O'Brien held up his left hand so Winston could see only the 4 fingers.
How many fingers am I holding up? He asked.
4,
replied Winston.
And if the party says I am holding up 5 fingers, how many fingers am I holding up?
4,
replied Winston. The word ended in Winston's cry of pain as the dial went up to 55. O'Brien watched him, then pulled the lever back slightly. The pain became less fierce, but it did not go away. O'Brien was still holding his hand up.
How many fingers?
4.
The dial went up to 60.
How many fingers, Winston?
4. What else can I say? 4.
The pain increased. O'Brien's hand seemed to shake in front of Winston's eyes, but still he saw 4 fingers.
How many fingers, Winston?
4. Stop the pain. 4.
How many fingers, Winston?
5.
No, Winston, you are lying. You still think there are 4. How many fingers, please?
Four, five, any number you like, but stop the pain!
Suddenly, he was sitting up with O'Brien's arm around his shoulders. Tears were falling down his cheeks. He did not remember O'Brien untying him from the bed so that he could sit up.
"You are a slow learner, Winston," said O'Brien.
Then he was lying down again, and the lever was moving again. The dial must have been on 70, 75. Still, there were four fingers in front of Winston.
"I would see five if I could," he cried.
"How many fingers, Winston?" said O'Brien, and the dial went up to 80.
"I don't know. Four, five, six. I really don't know."
"That's better," said O'Brien. "You must understand that we will change you, Winston. We will make your mind empty, and then we will fill it with all the things that the party believes. And we will keep you alive till you yourself decide to believe in them. We will make you one of us before we kill you." O'Brien showed Winston two small damp pieces of cloth, which he then put on either side of Winston's forehead.
"This time it will not hurt," he said quite kindly, as Winston's body went stiff, ready for more pain.
At that moment, there was a bright white light, and Winston felt as if the inside of his head had exploded, although there was no pain. Afterwards, he remembered who he was and where he was, but his head seemed to have an empty space inside it. It was as if a piece of his brain had been removed. O'Brien held up his hand again.
"There are five fingers here. Do you see five fingers?"
And Winston did see them for a moment.
"Yes," he replied.
"You see now," said O'Brien, "that it is possible for you to learn. And before we finish for today, have you got any questions?"
"What have you done with Julia?" Winston asked.
O'Brien smiled.
"It was a very straightforward interrogation. She betrayed you immediately, Winston. You would not recognize her now. Her anger against the party, her desire for sex, and her stupid ideas are all gone."
"Did you torture her?" asked Winston.
O'Brien did not answer.
"Next question," he said.
"Does Big Brother exist?"
"Of course he exists. The party exists. Big Brother is the party."
"Does he exist in the same way that I exist?"
"You do not exist, Winston," replied O'Brien. "Next question."
"What is in room 101? asked Winston.
"You know what is in room 101, replied O'Brien. "Everyone knows what is in room 101.